The desert sure is hot, and we've been working through the days. I pray I get back to my loving lady's gaze. Rifle in my hand and some brothers to my side. I can hardly wait for it to finally be quitting time.
I don't recognize it. What song is that?
Zach Bryan.
Okay.
Quitting Time.
Quitting Time by Zach Bryan. Cool.
Well, thank you guys for opening up the show.
Of course.
Pain's over. That's it. Now we can talk shop. We talk about construction, man. Welcome to the show, guys.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having us. Yeah, no, appreciate it.
This is good. I've been itching to have you guys on the show. So Anchor Construction.
That's us. It's Trevor, myself, and our third business partner, Nick, who isn't here today.
It's a trio, yeah.
That's it.
How long you guys known each other?
Oh, very long time.
Trevor's went to high school with Nick. So, like, grade 9 for you
grade
guys?
Grade 9, yeah. We were about 15 years old at the time, 32 now.
And you guys knew that it was construction? Or it was something?
Yeah,
not right away.
Very interesting story how we kind of put it all together.
Yeah, it's a long one for sure.
I met Alec at university. We lived down the hall from each other at Western at the time. And Alec was studying business. I was studying medical sciences. And quickly learned that wasn't for me, so I didn't last too
medical
long.
Sciences, eh?
Yeah, it was a tough crowd. You know, my first lecture, I walked in, 1,400 people in a room, and they said, who wants to be a doctor? Everybody put their hand up. And I said, okay, everyone put your hand down. Oh, yeah, of course. That was it. I'm like, that's the ticket. It's going to be this great job, you know, pay all the bills. I'll be able to provide. It'll be fantastic. But, yeah, the prof put up about 4 people's hands in the front row. He said, that's about how many of you are going to make it to the end. So better pick a different career path or have backup options.
He was setting you guys up.
Yeah, so that's it. I took that to heart. Said, you know what, this isn't for me. I got to figure something else out. Didn't really know at the time what to do, but ended up working for a trades company in Oakville digging post holes for fences, and it was hard
for
labor.
For a season?
I did it actually 3.5 years. Straight through, 12 months a year. There was a couple of years, the polar vortex year, we dug through the frost line. It was about 2 feet in Oakville, like jackhammering through it, and then eventually
man,
it hit
I'm
soft
already
soil.
Forming calluses on my hands, man.
It was quite an experience.
Okay, so you did that for 3.5 years.
3.5 years, and we like to say there's nothing like doing what you don't want to do to learn what you might want to do. So every day we're dreaming of different ideas. Maybe we'll do this, maybe we'll do that. Nick and myself at the time, actually, we wanted to start a media company. We were like, we'll go film concerts and stuff. That's what I was doing in London after I dropped out of school. I was just filming bar events and having fun with it. Nick actually has a very successful second business where that's what he does full time is media and concert coverage. So he kind of went full circle and brought it back. But at that time, I needed something to pay the bills. So we were doing trades work and absolutely miserable, miserable work. And one day it was about 50 days in a row straight. Didn't have a day off. Sundays, everything, 12-hour days. And,
all three of you guys?
Or no, this was just him. Me and Nick were both still in school at the time.
Got it. And you're doing the business side of things.
No, we hadn't started at this point. We were, Nick and I were both at university, and Trevor was working full time. And then Nick and I we joined him in the summer for a season or two, digging holes.
He made it appealing?
Yeah, I didn't have a job.
You bullshitted them, right?
Pretty much. I was like, save me. Like, I can do this with people that I'm friends with, I know, but.
It's better with friends.
Yeah.
Holy cow. So that's out of the gate. That's how I got started.
Pretty much, yeah. So we had a big blow up one day with the boss. We didn't see eye to eye, and we were like, okay, we had some side jobs lined up as always. I'm like, we'll build a couple of these fences. We'll see what happens and, you know, go from there. Next thing we knew, that single little 50-foot fence turned into like the whole block, and then people wanted decks, and it just was one thing after another. So we were like, we're so busy at this point. We didn't know what to do. I called Alec and said, hey, this summer, you probably won't be working for that other guy we were working with, but we can all work together. We got this great plan for building fences and decks, and we know how to do the hard part, which is the holes in the post settings. So we're like, we'll see where we can get to with this. That was what we always dreamed about when we were digging holes was, this is the worst part. I wish I could just build the work after. Like, we're setting everyone up for success, but this is the miserable part. You're just digging holes in the ground. It's not very fulfilling work. And granted, the guys we worked with were great at it. They worked quick and efficient. And that taught us a lot of things that we carried on with efficiencies in our business, carrying things down to the last detail, not letting things kind of slip by. He was very like, every day was accounted for. Mm-hmm. It was, if you're buying material in the morning, you're returning it at the end of the day if you're done for that day. There was no, we could use that on the next job, carry it forward.
Oh, man, that's a life lesson right there, right?
It was a lot.
We haven't really dialed that in yet. We still get at the end of the day, it's 5 o'clock. I'll take that home and throw it in the shop. We'll deal with it tomorrow.
Let me share the information. Anchor Construction, your info at anchorconstruction.ca, www.anchorconstruction.ca, and also on IG under Anchor Construction. And the phone number to reach them is 289-828-3044. Are you looking for a sustainable and durable real wood solution to elevate your next project? Let me introduce you to the gold standard. Thermery, the world's largest and most trusted manufacturer of thermally modified wood and sauna materials. Their wood is like the superhero version of regular wood, stronger, more stable, and ready to take on whatever Mother Nature throws its way. With a wide range of thermally modified wood products from decking and cladding to sauna and statement walls, when you choose Thermery, you're not just investing in quality, you're investing in the health of our planet too. Join countless architects, designers, builders, and homeowners who have trusted Thermery to bring their vision to life. The best way to fully experience the Thermery difference is to hold the real thing in your hands. So visit their website today at www.thermeryusa.com and also find them on IG at ThermeryUSA. Looking for cutting-edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than ElastiChem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over 3 decades, ElastiChem stands as an industry-leading supplying contractors across Canada with top-grade closed-cell, open-cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed-cell product. Time is precious, and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by ElastiChem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. Seeking top-tier windows? Look no further. Payne's Window Manufacturing is the ultimate choice for custom builders, contractors, and homeowners. Visit www.paynes.com now to experience the pinnacle of quality and customization. Get your instant custom quote today. Elevate excellence with us. Plus, enjoy nationwide shipping across Canada and the U.S. Do you dread the office? Are you spending your personal time on paperwork? Join the club. The good news is there's a solution that isn't hard or overwhelming. With SyncedUp's estimating and job tracking software, you can plan for it and hit your profit goals, all while cutting your estimating time by up to 90%. Do you know where your money is going? Are you sure you're even making money? SyncedUp will show you exactly where your money is going with its simple budgeting tool, revealing those cash leaks so you can take back control of your business. Do you wonder if all those payroll hours are making you money or costing you money? SyncedUp tracks your unbillable labor, helping you optimize for project efficiency and ensuring each job is profitable. At SyncedUp, they're here to help contractors thrive, not just survive. Get a budgeting consultation with a SyncedUp expert looking over your shoulder to help you optimize your company's budget for free using the link in the show notes. If you love what you see, you can use the TCL discount and get 20% off on your first 6 months. Annual plan is required. Just click on the link in the show notes to book your call with the sales team and mention the TCL podcast. Check out SyncedUp.com and at SyncedUp on IG to level up your business. Hey, architects and builders, do you want to stand out from the competition? Fraser Wood Siding has your back. Fraser Wood Siding is a leader in pre-finished wood siding. They manufacture beautiful pre-finished wood siding using only the highest quality PEFC certified Canadian softwood. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Fraser Wood Siding is available in 17 profiles and unlimited colors. Supplied by the global leader in paints, Sherwin-Williams. Whether your design taste is classic, contemporary, conservative, or bold, they've got you covered. They'll gladly match the color of any paint manufacturer and send a sample on an actual piece of Fraser Wood Siding in just a few days. Visit their website at www.fraserwoodsiding.com and reach out about your upcoming projects to benefit from their industry-leading lead times. Fraser Wood Siding, get inspired. Did you finish business school?
Yeah, I finished university at Western, and then so for the last 2 years of university, it was kind of just a summer job for me. And Nick was in Guelph. That's where we kind of started the company.
Okay.
And once we finished university, it became like a year-round full-time thing instead of trying to... I didn't really want to get an office job after university. After all the years of studying, I was like, I don't really... I hate sitting at the computer.
Yeah.
And I had worked a plethora of like trade related jobs, like landscaping, irrigation, commercial construction, drywall, the post hole digging. So I knew I enjoyed it, and we just committed to doing it full time, and we've just been growing ever since.
So how long, like you guys have been around for how long now, Anchors?
10 years.
Yeah, 10 years
now.
Yeah, 2015.
You guys are in your 30s, no?
32. Yeah.
And same with
Nick as well, yeah. Okay, we're all the same age, and we were born about a month apart, month and a half apart between the three of us. So a lot of birthdays, a lot of parties happen quick with our business.
How important is it? I mean, you guys were lucky. Are you guys lucky that you found the three of you guys, understanding that you had the same path, same goal?
Yeah, we really found that we were all athletes when we were younger. And when we started at the postal company, like, we were competing to work harder. Like, we were the best employees you could ever find. We'd be having races. Who could mix a wheelbarrow of concrete faster? Who's digging the fastest holes?
Who's carrying the most boards?
So yeah. Who was the fastest?
It's questionable.
Trevor was probably the best
at digging holes back in the day.
Yeah.
Because he was doing it full time. So he brought us in. So we were kind of playing catch up. But now we're all just unbelievable at digging holes.
It's wild. And yeah, there was a funny story with the origins. We had our first job lined up that was just hole digging. And it was a contract that my previous boss had passed on. And he's like, you know what? I don't want to do it. It's too far away. But it happened to be kind of close to where we were home basing in Guelph. And we call it the farm. They were an Instagram kind of celebrity that, they ended up with a large farm property that they purchased to, you know, have a sanctuary on it.
Okay.
And they hired us to dig the post holes for all their farm fencing. So when we went in, we were like, what a dream.
Hundreds and thousands?
Thousands. So when we originally quoted it, we were like, well, we'll do it for, you know, X amount per hole. And we know how much we can dig a day because we've been doing it for years. This is going to be amazing. This is going to be the best job ever. This is going to pave the path to success for our business. And little did we know, it was right on the escarpment, like Campbellville, North Burlington. You're not getting more than 6 inches in the ground before it's boulders.
Rock.
Not rocks, like
boulders.
Boulders. So,
like, you couldn't find dirt to save your life.
So that's our training ground.
Where's the solution?
Yeah, well, it's just hard work. Like, you just dig the hole bigger, you get the rocks out by hand. There was no heavy equipment. We weren't using excavators. We ended up doing foundation work for them for a pole barn that was so remote on their property that we ended up using 5-gallon pails from the concrete truck and carried them by hand, dropped them into the hole, poured the pier foundation with it. Like, just sweat equity. And that's how we kind of
no
built
power
the basis.
Anywhere. Couldn't get jackhammers out there.
So it wouldn't get worse. It could only get better.
Exactly.
From this moment onward.
Yeah. And every time we'd have new employees and we're like, you're going to learn to dig a post hole, that's where we would take them to do it. Because it's like you said, it doesn't get harder. It only gets better. You dream for the sand. You're like, wow, I can dig the fastest
deep hole. Going back
to
the lecture room, now you got 1,400 applicants and you're left with four that staying because they could handle a boulder, right?
Yeah, especially exactly these days with the kids coming up.
Yeah, no augers, just post hole?
Mostly shovels, mostly post hole shovels. We ended up investing in some of our own, like similar to the rental ones, a little bit smaller, easier to kind of carry around. And that was a technique we kind of used from the last businesses that we were working at. Easier to manipulate. You don't get extra power going to the hydraulic rentals. You need to go into like a dingo or a bobcat or something.
Yeah.
And just like the two-wheel groundhog, like one-man machine.
Yeah.
It's tough. A lot of people yell at us all the time. They say, go get a dingo. Why are you guys killing yourself? But I'm like, you don't understand the properties we work on. There'll be a 30-inch gate along the side of a house. They'll have garden beds next to the fence. They'll have a pool with hardscape. By the time you drive a dingo back there, put plywood down, ruin their grass, replace the sod, wreck all their flowers, accessibility is a big thing. So we use this tiny little machine. It still punches the holes as long as there's not huge rocks, and it can go anywhere.
So that's the starting of it. Now, how many years did you guys focus on the decks and the fences kind of outdoor projects?
Probably 4 or 5 years we were straight decks and fences.
Okay.
And we've really branched out a lot more recently now that we're doing like full winters. We're doing interior renovations. Trevor's up north doing a lot of docks and exterior finish work. But we keep growing like the breadth of things that we're offering. As we were offered jobs, we'd learn more things and just grow on that. And we've learned a lot from just following other people on Instagram and like being very interested in educating ourselves as we go.
What are some of the bullshit rules associated with docs, man, regarding building code and variances and irate neighbors?
A lot of it really comes down to like square footage sizes. So certain lakes have certain allowances, how big you can build. And obviously everyone's pushing the limits. They want to get the max out of everything. Yeah. But a lot of it comes down to like under docs is confined space.
Okay.
So if you need to, you drop a tool or you need to access something under there, you know, there's a lot of work requirements. And coming from operating a business where we weren't working as subs, we were direct to client.
Yeah.
And now our northern kind of division is almost exclusively sub work. There's a lot more like rules and stipulations to follow that maybe we would be like, that's okay. It's just us. We'll handle that. Where now it's like, we need to follow those rules. We have to work in pairs. There's a lot of lost tools to the open water, and
I can imagine. I saw some of the content you guys are doing, and I'm like, it's really easy to lose something, and it's real pointless to have them tethered.
That's it. Yeah, the tethers you can only become have so a nightmare.
Many tethers,
right? Yeah.
Like we do it for the impacts and the drills, but when you're working with like six clamps along like a line of V-pay,
yeah,
trying to tighten everything up, and somebody trips on one, it goes in the water, and you just watch it sink 60 feet.
And you can't do nothing about
nothing
it.
Nothing at all.
You're just wishing there's a beluga whale there, bring back the iPhone. That's all you're doing, right?
Yeah, that's literally not
the case, right?
Yeah, last year, actually, the contractor we've been doing a lot of work for, he's been on the show before, fantastic guy. Shout out Mac Robertson at Sustainment. Oh, yeah. So yeah. We actually do a lot of work with Mac, and very fantastic guy. One of the projects from last year we did, he dropped his phone off making content while the dock is being built. Luckily, one of the underwater welders brought his iPhone back up from about 60 feet, and he's still making content on it. So It's sometimes you get lucky, but 90% of the time they're lost.
Something
to the
good
abyss.
About Apple.
Right? Okay. Have a good case and a good phone, then maybe it'll make it back up.
But how was the first time working with ePay?
A learning curve for sure.
Yeah. We had done a fence before. We'd done an ePay fence in Burlington. But the weight of the, because the fascia for the docks that Trevor's doing, some of it's 2x10 ePay, 20 feet lengths. And they'll have us carry it down a hill or a cliff.
That's
to get to
good,
the dock.
Good amount of weight, man.
Oh, yeah.
That one.
It's like an LVL pretty much.
Yeah.
And then you're carrying like skids of them down to the dock.
So it's some of the access is most of the problems now. Obviously, with the development up north, a lot of the lots being developed are kind of the less desirables of the last 5-10 years, where you know the access isn't as great, or there's massive elevation changes. So we usually call them the goat hills as we work down them, because when we show up, it's untouched. The steel usually went in the winters when they have the ice, and we're kind of in that weird. Like we have ice for some of it, some of the projects we don't, and you really miss the ice when it goes away, when you can walk around faces at a nice comfortable working height instead of you're bent over like a shrimp all day, leaning over and under. It's hard ergonomics, but it falls back on the like sweat equity. Like we did worse things for longer. This doesn't seem that bad, but when you try to bring new employees in, they're looking at you like you have five heads when you ask them to be bent over all day. Like the famous Larry Hahn saying, asses and elbows. That's it when you're doing dock work. You're just bent over all day putting clips in, pre-drilling and screwing it down.
It's just work. You just got to get it done. Simple as that. There's steps, right?
Exactly.
Did you guys ever, I know you guys are, is everybody in Milwaukee on the crew?
Yeah, Trevor's recently been dipping into the DeWalt, but we've been Milwaukee for about 9-10 years now. Mm-hmm. We had some DeWalt cordless framing nailers our first couple years. And we had five of them with a full set, and they all broke. So,
well, wait, like they were just jamming, or
the internal components couldn't take the abuse for the amount of ring shank galvanized nails we were putting in. We kind of like our build secrets for fencing, you could say, like not to gatekeep anything. We were always using ring shank galv nails and screwing, and not one or the other, just to kind of throw everything at it, and then. We realized
so what are you doing? Putting two and then a third, or how are you doing it?
Like it's kind of similar, like stud work, like 2x2x4, 3x2x6, toenailing the bottom edge to keep the panels from falling, and then you add screws to tighten everything up.
Yeah, so it doesn't pull apart.
I like that.
But the abuse of the amount of nails that you go through on a fence, like even doing traditional house framing and then doing fence work, like there'll be days building fences where you go through 5-6 boxes of 2-inch nails, just banging boards onto the fence like no tomorrow. Yeah. And the abuse, we found that there wasn't a cordless nailer that could keep up, but it left a sour taste spending $700 a nailer and investing in 5-6 of them, and they last a month. You get them rebuilt, they last another month. So we went back to air, essentially, which was a bit of a headache. You know, you're used to just
getting you gotta the nailer and battery. Down, you got to bring coils, right? So it's just...
And the power solutions was the biggest problem we found fencing is we'd end up blowing like 4 or 5 properties worth of breakers as we're working, because you get access to multiple yards and you work on one, they're not home, breaker blows.
You get the right compressor.
Move to the next one. So,
well, compressors are, they're absorbed more than 15 amps, right?
Some of them. The ones we've bought recently aren't, like the smaller, or what's the Makita?
Like the Mac 24, I think it is.
That's the one without wheels, right?
Yeah. And then like the big bore Makita is the one I use for framing, but I think that's like 13 and a half continuous draw. So you end up blowing, if you're not plugged straight into a good power source,
you blow
it. And a lot of the work up north is like a big generator feeding a power distribution box, which then feeds one extension cord with 30 of us plugged into it. You're yelling from 300 feet away, "Hey, plug me back in. I'm tracks on right now. Like, come on." So it's, you know, the things that we've switched up from, you know, again, being residential direct client to now working multi-trade sites with a lot of people, and, you know, keeping accountability for your tools as well is a big thing. We never used to worry about it being, it's only us there, and we'll know if we didn't pack everything up because it'll still be sitting there doing our double checks at the end of the day. When you're on a large trade site, you know, someone may have packed your charger up when you're still working, or vice versa. It happens. So
what did our friends from DeWalt say about the guns that you guys spent a lot of time and money and effort and rebuild and repaired?
At one point, somebody said, it was like a couple months, somebody who worked with DeWalt, they said, there's a new generation coming out in like 2 months after Christmas. We'll send it out to you. But that never happened. They did send us some FlexVolt batteries to replace a couple FlexVolts that died. But after that, yeah, it kind of fell off. And we weren't too worried about it because we had just moved on.
But pneumatically... You're not using Milwaukee pneumatically. You're using Hitachi.
Or Metabo.
Yeah, Metabo, Hitachi. I'm a big fan of using like the older A series Hitachi guns, like an A2 and an A3.
Want to make a tradesperson cry? Just have that stolen.
Oh, it's they're irreplaceable these days.
That's why I know.
Yeah, spend many hours on Facebook Marketplace looking, and when you get that lucky $200, don't know what they have. It's been sitting in a basement for 30 years.
Just found it.
Yeah, it's the all holiness, and I like to think that's like a side hobby for me. I love the Facebook Marketplace, but as we've grown as a business, it's a lot harder to buy assets on Facebook Marketplace with cash than try to, you know, buy something legitimately, have a write-off, have everything.
Why don't they, with all the retro shit going on, like retro cars and retro all this other crap happening, why don't they retro that gun?
Honestly.
Like take the same specs from way back when and get the assembly line and rebuild that gun exactly the way it is.
That's exactly. The New Tools, I think, is the name of the brand. It's like a black and gray.
Okay.
Very similar build style, and that we used that one for a while. Bissett fasteners, like we almost exclusively use Bissett nails, supporting like a made in Canada brand.
And yeah, they're a great brand.
We bought
and great too.
Yeah, and that's something we got really lucky with. We kind of threw a shot in the dark one day out on Instagram, said, "Hey, if you're looking for people to test your product, like, we love your stuff. We use it exclusively. If you got anything you want to send our way," just that really greasy shot in the dark on Instagram. You never know. And it worked. And they're awesome. They're a great team to work with. So we have the Beast Nailer that they have, like, it's great. It's awesome. It's massive. That's my only downfall. It's a little bit big and bulky, but with the A series guns, they're the same. A lot of the guys those.
They're tanks.
The cheaper new Metabo ones.
That's what that gun's supposed to be like, right?
Robust. Let's see guys using them as hammers all the time. And I talk with Matt Fuller about this, where he's like, I saw someone do that with my 30-year-old nailer using it like a hammer, the quickest ticket out of the site. He's the
first one to do it.
But himself, it's like, to do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly,
type deal.
Right? But still.
Yeah, so that happens a lot on site where I'll say, don't use that or don't do that this way. And they look over and I'm in the corner banging it and being like, it's me though. It's my tool. Don't worry about it.
You can't break my stuff.
So a lot of it falls in like personal accountability. Like we like to kind of keep track of our own stuff. Of course. Even though we're a shared company with three owners, it's still, you know, you have your own pack out set up, your own like tool trailer, you have your own stuff. So if you're borrowing my stuff and beating the crap out of it, I'm going to be upset when I'm the one like, oh, now I don't have my Brad nailer because you dropped it off a ladder last week. Fantastic. I got to go buy a new one. It takes time and effort. So we like to kind of stay on top of like whose is whose, but it's funny because our employees will know, like, oh, don't touch that. That's Alex's drill, and that's his special drill. He doesn't like when people use it.
Is the name engraved, or is it just markered on?
No, it's just, we just know.
You guys just know?
Somehow, wear and tear, they all look a little different.
Yeah, and it's almost like a great test for new employees, where they learn how quick it is and the effort they put into being like, I don't care, throw that in whatever bin. So there's been jokes made about, like, whose tools are whose based on how they put them away. There's an order within who's neater than others and who carries a cleaner setup type deal. So it's also motivation. You want to be the best and have the nicest setup, the cleanest tools and stuff that doesn't look like, you know, you just absolutely abuse it and don't care about the quality of the stuff.
Well, because that's the recipe to get the work done properly, right?
Yeah, you got to know where everything is. Yeah. Nice and simple. Go grab this. Everyone knows where it is.
Simple. How many guys you got working for you guys?
Trevor's got 3 full-time up north and then 2 subs that work with him. So you guys have 6 on site, right?
Yeah, we're a 6-man crew full-time. Yeah.
All younger than you? About the same age?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the city, it kind of varies.
We lay a couple guys off for the summer. We got a couple younger kids. And then we got a guy, Jeff, who comes in from Toronto. He's older than us. He's 46.
Okay.
But he's really well-rounded, great employee. Always shows up on time, and it's good to...
He's older. He's 46.
He's trustworthy, right?
He's reliable. Yeah, he's really reliable.
You can have him show things to the younger guys. And but we have 2 younger guys, him, my cousin, who's the same age as us, and Nick. So we're 6 down here as well.
So now that it's spring, it's first week of April, do you guys every spring get phone calls from clients like, I'm ready for my deck, I'm ready for my fence?
Yeah, the first sunny day, everyone will call, and they want you there next week.
Why do they do that?
They just don't have
Why don't they have a conversation with you in fall?
It's like some people do. Like
yeah.
The guys who call in February and January were like, you're a smart client. You're actually going to get your job done in May. Everyone else is like, you tell them, like, you're actually July, August now. And they're like, what?
You know what it is? It's when they go to the big box store and they start seeing the sheds pop out and they start seeing the garden baskets coming out, fertilizer, soil bag, whatever, all that shit. They're like, oh. We need a deck.
Yeah. That's an interesting thought. It's like we should be going to Home Depot and pushing them out on it. Be like, hey, this year, put them out at this time. We'll get the calls rolling. We've joked about it for years. It's the first sunny day, phone doesn't stop ringing, the emails fly in. And if you get a weird weather year like this year where you get the nice weather and then it goes really bad again, it's wild. We'll get a huge influx, quiet for a few weeks. Huge influx again. So it's
they just think you're sitting around waiting for their call is what they think, right? And that's not the case, man.
Yeah, and if someone's available to do your job in 2 weeks, what does that say about them, right?
It's exactly
kind of a little bit of a red flag. Unless they had a last minute cancellation, they probably shouldn't be available.
But those are rare, right? Once in a while, depending on what the situation is, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. How is the transition going from all the outdoor work, because you guys started the business doing that, getting into the interior construction work, right? Was that easy, seamless?
It wasn't too bad. Like, Trevor's dad has always been like a bit of a general contractor. He does his own contracting. So we both have some knowledge. Like, I did the commercial construction for a summer. Had a lot of great project managers that were very adamant about teaching, like, painting. This is how you drywall. This is how you frame. This is flooring, blah, blah, blah. And I hung drywall for about 3 years when I was at Western.
Okay.
Just here and there. Day in and out, just with a local guy there. And so we had a pretty well-rounded knowledge of how everything worked and went together. So we just kind of had to focus on those skills a little bit more, just round them out. But it came pretty naturally.
And was it a different mindset when you were selling to clients?
Definitely.
I guess the conversation or the mindset's different when you're speaking to them about outdoor bigger projects.
Yeah.
And then the fit and finish about indoor.
That's it. We were definitely a little lost. I'd be lying if I said we didn't lose our shirt on a couple things.
Oh, of course. I mean, you had to learn.
Yeah. Like
years of underquality.
We did a full interior basement renovation from concrete to finish, like fixtures included, $18,000, which I laugh at that now. I go, wow, that's like, what were we thinking?
How did you didn't make any money?
Oh, zero. And there was points where we were just like, well, we're relying on what we have hoarded away. We've always been a very, like, we try to be self-reliant. Like, we have never taken a line of credit, like a loan or anything for our business. It's always been kind of like self-reliant. We save as much as we can and purchase where we can, save money on large purchases or bulk buys or whatever. But that those are the jobs where you learn real hard, real quick, where you're halfway through your commitment and you're already losing money. And you're like, it's integrity or I walk away and I don't lose any more money. No, but what do you do, right?
Like, you learn.
That's it, you learn. We didn't have employees at that point too. So it was like, okay, we're only going to make $2,000 each off this job, but we're not losing money. We had no overhead. We didn't have new trucks at that point. We got some auction trucks when we started our business. And so we weren't
auction,
making
there's
a lot
nothing
of
wrong
money.
With auction trucks, man.
I there's blew some things wrong.
Yeah, I blew the brake lines on the drive home, which was a new experience for me. Highway 6, just putting into Guelph, and it's like rush hour traffic. And I step on the brakes, nothing. I'm just still like a truck going down the road, like, now what? I'm pumping them, nothing. What do you do? So ended up in the gravel on the side. And
where's the emergency brake on a truck? Is it just a pole on the...
Yeah, honestly,
on that one, I would not know.
It probably was still rusted through. It was an old Salter truck.
Probably seized.
Yeah. Oh.
So even if you try to pull it, it was seized.
Oh, yeah. It probably would have fallen into pieces. I'm amazed that...
a city of Guelph salt truck. So it only had 70,000 K on it.
Yeah.
And we paid like
$3,000. I didn't want to know K. I wanted to know how many people went through that truck.
Oh, yeah. Oh. The frame was like just rusting.
No
right
tailgate.
Out. The tailgate rusted out. It fell out.
How much was it?
Two and a half, $2,500 $3,000
And then $1,500 the next day.
About 2,000 too much.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. Wait, the best part, Nick and I were driving back, we call Alec, hey, there's an auction. We're gonna stop in. They look like they got some farm equipment. Maybe we'll see if there's a truck. He says, don't buy a truck. We called him not even an hour later, and he's like, are you kidding me? We're like, we bought a truck, our first truck ever. At that point, we were operating out of Nick's girlfriend at the time, now his wife. Yeah. We were dropping her off at work in Guelph at her government job, taking her Chevy HHR two-seater car, loading up the three of us in it with our little beaver ground hole, or our little beaver auger that we bought off of like a Polish gangster in Ottawa. And very insane experience.
Facebook found?
Yeah, like, Facebook. Okay. Oh, yeah. What a deal, right? So I'm going to go drive 8 hours there, 8 hours back, and buy this thing that doesn't even work.
Was it daylight when you met him and left?
It walked right into like a deli and walked in daylight, middle of the day, and had six large grown gentlemen look at me like I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Took me around back and shows me this like auger that I knew what it was. He didn't even know. He
goes, were there flags on the wall?
Oh, quite a few. Okay. Yeah, quite a few, right? And I'm like, I don't know how much
actually. Without a maple leaf and red stripes, right?
So I'm sitting here thinking like, yeah, this is safe enough. This will be all right. So he just typical go around back. I don't know what it is. Don't know how it works. And some guy owed me money and this is how I got it. So I'm like, okay, great. Here's the money.
Good story. Thank you.
Drive on home. So we would cram that in the back of the HHR.
You're walking out and you're looking for anything reflective to see behind you without looking over your shoulder.
That's honestly, you're just like, I feel like I just got robbed. I got something out of the deal, but I still feel like I got robbed out of here.
Violated.
But yeah, that was an experience.
But it worked.
It took a little TLC. We had to put a new engine on it, which was seized, but like it was all small engine work. And we've always been a like never say no type of people, all three of us really. So, there's YouTube. We'll figure it out. We'll fix it. A lot of drives down to where was it, like Strathroy or Windsor.
Only after parts.
Yeah, one place that sold parts for this machine, and it was another fence company, like 3-4 hours away. So if we broke like the clutch, one of us was driving in there.
So it was never a no.
Never. You figure it out.
There's always a solution.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when we started the company, none of us owned a vehicle. We were poor students. We had nothing. And Nick's girlfriend had this HHR, which was like a PT cruiser.
Well, I know exactly what it is. It's not a very attractive looking vehicle.
No. And it was the panel version. So it didn't have handles on the back door.
Okay.
So no back seats.
One guy would be in the back laying down with like tools piled up beside them. We'd throw demo in there and you'd be driving home and there'd be nails stabbing in your arm. You'd be like, slow down. And he'd pull up to a job and the guy in the passenger seat would have to get out, open the back door for the guy
to
laying in the back and just roll out of there. And the clients are like, what the hell? There's three of you in there? It was like a clown car.
It was real budget operation at that point.
But the work was good. The quality was good. So they didn't really contest it at that point, right?
That's it. You always focus on quality first, always. That's kind of been the precedent that we realized over time. The higher quality work you do, gave a lot of word of mouth referrals, which was the most powerful form of marketing for us. We'd spend money on the ads and like we were saying before the podcast, bag signs that we did for a while. And you know, now I feel more inclined to
bag signs work.
They're great. Yeah. They give you volume, yeah, which was great. But we realized we were trying to market ourselves to a higher end client without knowing that at the time. We were just like, everyone we get, we go there, they're just beating us down on price. Well, this guy will do it cheaper. This guy said he'll do it for this much. And we're like, well, call them then. Like, no offense, like but we're going to provide you the best service. It's not going to be the most expensive. I guarantee you that will be fairly priced, but it'll be the best because that's who we are as a person and as a business.
And how do they respond?
Honestly,
the right clients respond, yeah, the right way.
And that's kind of filters well out.
Like, you don't want the cheapest clients.
No.
And it's not gratifying doing that kind of work either.
No, that was it.
But in the back of your head, you're thinking, we need to make some money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, post repair was big for us for a long time, like digging out an old broken fence post and putting, yep, a new one in. And yeah, we called them reineries, and it would be like, yeah, they're grunt work. They're really hard. They're tough. The access is always terrible. You're worrying about people's properties and lawns and gardens, and they're terrible. But when you got good at them, they were lucrative money for us. So with our experience with another company, when we came in and kind of modified our approach to it, like bought a couple different tools, tried some new things system out. Yeah, exactly. We dialed in our system to like the absolute max efficiency on it, where there was days where we would go do 15 of them a day with two people, and it would bring you
the re-enries.
Yeah, the re-enries, and yeah, like a couple hundred bucks a pop, man. Like, oh, yeah, it's hot money. And I'm like, you can go frame a custom home or something like a large project and take home less than fixing a fence post. So it was like, the money's in the harder work that's not as gratifying. But now, like when they were in university, I was doing framing in the winters, and I kind of try to work with different custom home framers, learn different tips here and there. And that's kind of where I was like, the gratifying work for me is the bigger work, but the projects seem to, like, the money's not as well as what I was used to with the lucrative work, which is, you know, the sweat equity, the hard work. But it's hard to build a brand based off of sweat equity and killing your bodies over and over and over. You kind of need to branch out. And with the recession timing, that kind of feels like everything's slowing a little bit. It's not like full hard stop recession, but we're definitely noticing like finishes are dialing back on houses.
Yep.
Things that were wooden are now drywall, or,
yep,
you know, hardwood soffits are now aluminum.
It's just a different conversation. That's all it is.
That's exactly it.
If you find the right clients, you can still navigate those waters and get the work.
Exactly.
Not that bad.
Yeah, and I feel like branching out and covering more things really allowed us as a business to stay solid with our bookings, offering different things and always kind of growing and getting ahead and trying something, saying, no, this isn't what we want to do. Let's focus more on like the fences or the decks. And it became decks for us after fences were kind of so redundant. And then decks was like, let's push ourselves. Let's go to like NADRA events. Let's go to the Deck Expo and learn and meet other people that we follow on Instagram that we look up to. Let's push ourselves to be the best offering in the area that we can. And we've since learned there are a lot of amazing builders in Ontario. And it's not as much about competition. It's about collaborating.
Yeah.
Look, everyone reaches out. You can ask a question to a builder that might have bid on the same job as you, and they'll openly tell you, hey, this is how I would do it. This is the best technique that I've learned.
Were you guys surprised when that started happening?
It was kind of weird. It felt like it was in the era of the like tool reviewers died kind of on Instagram, and it was more of like help people and not just throw content in their face at tools.
Yeah.
Transition to more of like the tips were like the huge thing that were blowing people up. And yeah, it is amazing how open old contractors are, like not old, but older than us.
More experience.
And even guys that are working like in the same area as us, that you'd be like, we are your direct competition. They'll help you any day. You can call them, ask them where they get this, how they'd approach this, or like an issue you ran into, and everyone will help you.
I think the good trades are not concerned about competition.
Yeah. That's if you're good, you stay busy.
As simple as that.
Exactly.
Where did the name come from? Is there a story behind the name?
Yeah, funny enough, so Nick and I were living together in like a 1.5 bedroom apartment in Guelph.
Who had the half?
That was me. So Nick and his girlfriend, they moved in together, and I was living with my parents post-university at the time. I'd moved back, and that was a hard transition for me. So it was hard. I felt like, you know, I really let my family down, that they had high expectations of what I was going to do, and they were proud of what it sounded like I was headed into. But the stress and everything kind of, it got to me. That fell apart. Moving back home, I had a hard time transitioning back into like somebody else's home life and living my own rules.
By the way, but you're a surgeon of a different kind now.
We made a lot of jokes of like, oh, I got a PhD, a post hole digger. not too different, right? So it was a weird transition, but living with Nick and Taylor, that was my opportunity to, you know, move out of my house. Rent was like a couple hundred bucks for my share. I lived in a triangle shaped room with a door on one and a window on the other. So not really, could even fit a bed in there. Wow. But okay, we found out after it was a rub and tug before we lived there.
So no black lights allowed in this room.
Oh yeah. No. Like my room was black painted walls and red curtains. And I'm like, nothing really, like no red flags went off. Here. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
They cut a hole in our little apartment, like balcony, so it had its own access door, so you didn't even have
You don't need to make it more vivid. I already know I know exactly how that looks.
The picture. So we are sitting in that apartment one day, and Nick and I were, you know, brainstorming the world of all the ways we were gonna become successful and do great. And we had a couple of business ideas. We had our media company we wanted to create, and then we were like, well, if we have to start a construction company, it'll be this. I distinctly remember the paper on the wall. And we had all our business names written down for each business we were going to have. They all started with A because we were like Yellow Pages, Google, like alphabetical, got to be at the top. Oh my God, that was really stupid. So now we like, you know, we rolled with the brand, we stuck with it. We're like, you know, we anchor you in our good quality. Like it's a strong keyword now that we lean on, but really it was just picked because it was started with A.
But no, it has meaning behind it. I guess customers buy it.
Yeah.
They totally believe it. They see it.
Sounds solid.
Yeah, exactly, right?
That's it.
What do you guys prefer, the interior or the exterior?
Definitely exterior for me.
Yeah. Really?
I like framing the most. It's like a challenge. Every house is different. But for us, like financially, it doesn't make the most success because a lot of our employees haven't had that background. They've had a lot of fence and deck experience, but there's a lot to get good at framing, and you can follow all the great framers in the world on Instagram. But like, if you can't make sense of what they're doing, it's hard to teach yourself the good quality techniques to make yourself a successful
framer. You kind of have to be thrown right into it and then do it.
That's it.
Yeah. There's too many different scenarios. Yeah. So
it's a good challenge once in a while. I like to get in on a good build and kind of wrap my head around like cutting a roof or something, but it's tough because like financially it's not as lucrative as what I'm used to. So I want to kind of go back to, you know, doing fences and decks and being really good, really fast, and considering myself one of the best in the area for those services. But when it comes to framing, I'm like, oh, I just feel like a small dog in a giant world, like looking at all the
it
great.
It does feel like that. So. For sure it does. How did you guys navigate the waters during the pandemic bullshit with the reduction of engineered lumber and LVLs and all that shit, that fiasco, fucking scarcity that was designed, right?
Yeah, it was kind of brutal. We weren't working with many engineered products at that time, but a lot of PT. Some days we'd drive to 6 different lumber yards just to get fence boards.
Driving 2 hours away. We did, the farthest one was Shelburne. So we drove from like Burlington area to Shelburne. They'd only let you buy $1,000 of lumber in their yard because you weren't a preferred contractor.
You know, there was no shortage, eh?
Oh, never. It just, everyone's,
it was done just for price, eh?
Yeah. And that was the prices at those times too. Like,
and people were paying it. They were literally testing you guys.
Yeah. It was wild. Absolutely wild.
In the spring, we saw the prices just flying up and we're like, oh my God, nobody's going to build a fence.
It's almost like you didn't want to blink. I swear someone would come and change the price.
Yeah. If we were $42 a foot for our best fence pre-COVID, and after COVID, it was like in the 80s.
Yeah,
like literally doubled
price.
We didn't think anyone was going to book a job that summer, and then everyone couldn't travel, they had their vacation money, interest rates were at like 1%, so people were remortgaging their houses, housing market was soaring up, so it was actually our busiest summer ever.
Biggest projects we've done. Everybody was
investing. And even going the vinyl or the composite route wasn't even an option because they were jacking that shit up too, using their excuses on that kind of crap.
Yeah, there wasn't any way to avoid the price.
You were going to pay. So if you wanted to get it done, you're going to pay. Simple as that.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a difficult time with the lumber prices. Usually we can set our price pretty standard for the year.
And was it difficult because of dealing, or not dealing, but having to, I guess, understand the client's position, because you're going in already having a conversation before you get the job where it's like, you're probably looking at 42 a linear, right? So you're doing that, but now you're coming back at them at 80 plus, and you have to try to
you have to pay this because if I don't charge you this, then there's no, I'm not going to show up because it's going to cost me less to stay home.
Yeah, exactly.
I still have to run a business.
Yeah, that's why we changed like our quotes. We would preface it with this quote is valid for like 14 days.
You guys are being generous.
Instead of like the year, like we'd give a quote out in January, you could book us in December for the same price and it wouldn't matter. Like we were very honest to our pricing.
The wood suits, man, I knew for a fact that they were just literally having a meeting and just going.
Yeah, record profits.
What number do you want to throw this at?
They're definitely calling each other. Yeah. Like, hey, let's see how far we can go with this.
Like the biggest mills, like we did a lot of research into even specific pressure treated companies and products that were on the market for what we like to offer. And there was brands of pressure, like brown pressure treated material. And that really took off, the green to brown switch. Everyone was like, okay, the brown PT and kind of categorize it all as one. We learned like which brands were the best to work with, which products lasted the longest. And we were actually doing a workaway trip in Edmonton and we were in Jasper. And there was a wood manufacturing facility along the drive that we went through on the way into the mountains. It happened to be one of the forest companies that provides to the, they're the mill that provides to the treatment facility that we like to buy.
Yeah.
Probably 5 kilometer stretch of road, full yard, like lifts, like 20 lifts high, just as far as you could see, just lumber, 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 just hoarding it. We're like, wow. But yet they tell you there's no lumber coming on the rail cars into like Martin Grove at Rona. People at that point were chasing trucks down on the highway, driving, following them, going to the yard, buying them by the truck. We saw all the
memes online on social media, everyone just making a joke about like the flatbed of a truck. And
oh, yeah.
It's a millionaire.
Yeah, exactly, right?
But let's get a plywood.
We had a lot of competition in the area that was nice enough to be like, hey, there's lumber at this store today. And you would drive out there, you'd see the five guys that you know doing the same work as you. And it was kind of like the brotherhood, take care of each other. Like if you knew where lumber was, you'd help them out because every store was like keeping you to a committed amount you would buy, $1,000 or $2,000. You're like, great, this is going to take me 9 trips to this lumber yard 2 hours away to finish this job that maybe has $200 of profit in it because I should have built it in 4 hours. So there's a lot of like moving parts during COVID that we were just happy to stay afloat and stay busy, stay working. Yeah, and
we're lucky to be working outside.
Yeah.
So the social distancing wasn't a huge issue.
Yeah.
We could go quote a job, be in their backyard and be like, okay, stay like 8 feet away. It's not as intrusive as interior guys who would have had a real tough time.
Was it a pain for Ipe?
Or Ipe wasn't even Ipe docs at that point. Yeah. It was more of a recent thing that we've gotten into.
What do you guys prefer? Do you guys prefer wood or composite?
For decks, we do push a lot of composite. I know you had the Thermory guys on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You guys were really shitting on the composite. But it's people are getting
I'm
it
a
because
wood guy.
I know. I love the wood too.
I've always
it looks
loved
great.
Wood.
It's just the clients go for it because of they don't want maintenance.
I know, they're but there's so no such thing kind of like soundproofing. There's no such thing as the term soundproofing. You can mitigate sound. You can reduce sound. You can't make it 100% soundproof.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. So it's the same thing with maintenance. There's no such thing as maintenance-free anything.
Just low maintenance.
Low maintenance is the word. But, I mean, they're clever on how they position that. And if you are a wood person, prepare to have that contractor come back twice, three times a year to oil it, sand it, take care of it, wash it, shit like that. There's a lot of work associated with it. But
definitely,
I'm a wood guy. Like, I even just came across an old project of mine, and I was looking at it, and it's actually a Thermory product, and it was all ash, and it's all silver. And I'm like, fuck, that silver is beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that silver is just, like, it's probably about a 10-year age, right? It never got the age, or it never got the protection, the oil.
Yeah.
It just got Mother Nature's sun. And I'm like, kind of looks nice, man. It's nice, soft on your feet.
Definitely.
Like it's nice, right? That's why I'm
a wood it feels guy, a little homier, right?
Yeah, that's why I like it, right? So it's just I'm not shitting on composite.
A lot of the guys up north too,
I've done it before. I'm not a fan of it, man.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
It's hard to work with too. It makes a mess. Like, you know,
it
a lot of people
like shit to cut it. It doesn't it doesn't bring me back to being a kid cutting it on the miter saw.
Yeah. Oh, not at all. Yeah.
The multi-tool piece.
Like, what am I allowed to be breathing this shit in? It just seems like I shouldn't be breathing this shit in, right?
I mean, the step up to Ipe, we allow you to look back being like, I miss the plastic pellets of the, or mineral pellets of the decking we're using. Ipe, it's like a green cloud appearing and it stains your hands and your clothes and your tools. You can tell how hard the day was from how ruined the tools are. Like, you're looking at them like, my Festool track is orange.
Yeah,
and it's like everything tints on the Ipe stuff. But it, I mean, everything I think has a time and a place for the right materials on site. Like I like working with wood, I'd say is more, I align with you on that. But I also like a good high traction composite for certain areas in your backyard, similar around pools or, you know, under porches, areas where it's not going to take the weathering like a thermary product or like a hardwood product will. Because up north, we talk about it a lot. Nobody oils or seals the hardwood docks that we work on. And it's like, we're like, that's got to be a lucrative job. Like you come back a couple times a year. Everybody responds on our stories when the Ipe is wet. When we lay a nice dock and it rains.
Yeah, the grain pops it's, out.
Oh, wow, that's beautiful. You know, that's what it looks like when you oil it too. But the vibe up there is once that's got that gray weathering to it, it's beautiful. It's unmatched. It looks natural to what's being built around it. That's why I think nobody's doing composite or PVC products on decking out there. It's very rare to see a PVC or composite dock. Yeah. And I don't think it could take that like direct sunlight, I don't direct think it could exposure. Take
the winter, like it's just, I think it'd be.
It just gets too hot too.
Yeah, yeah. And you can't like that's why I have a problem. Is like the first composite deck I ever built, I was just reading up on it, and all of a sudden, let me try this. Took off my boots and took off my socks, and it was a hot. It was during the summer.
Oh, yeah.
I walked on it, and I was like, this ain't comfortable, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And these people have pets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which, that's, like, yeah. I'm conscious of pets' paws, right? So of it's course. Like, this ain't going to be comfortable for the dog.
Oh, children, too.
We've built. So what's the point about, like, opening up the door and then go outside and hang out on the deck? What? It's like basically a skillet.
Yeah.
Like, you're cooking now is at that point. That's why I'm not a fan of it. Wood doesn't get that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said dark-colored composites and stuff can be really tough.
Yeah, we're always pushing people for the lightest color you can. And we normally push decorators, like, versus, like, AZEK and Trex.
Yeah.
It's just, like, mineral-based composites, like, lower thermal expansion, and it stays cooler. But Trevor sold a deck during COVID that was, these clients were adamant on the entire deck being black. Black Trex.
We tried everything,
and it was really, really stupid. And you built it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
they actually had a child during the process of us building, because it was a massive project for us. We worked with another client that bid like a larger portion of a house reno. We got the exterior portion of it. We did the hardscape patio for them because their patio guy fell through. It was one of those, like, I'd be worried on a day where the sun hit it and the kid fell on all fours and walk around, because they'd just walk around carrying the kid, and they have dogs as well. And like black aluminum railings with black hot tub cover,
full sun.
Yeah. They changed the house, all the siding to black windows. Like, it was wild. That was their vibe. And it was a fantastic project. I love it. The lighting on that project was one of my favorite on anyone we've ever done. They kind of gave us free rein to be like, do what you think is going to look right on this. Built-in benches on our like seated composite benches with built-in drawers in them and stuff. It was a great project, but we tried so hard to be like, don't use black. You're going to regret it, and you're spending a lot of money on this product.
Was it a premium? It was more expensive too, no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we ended up... Trex was the only brand that we could get a dark color in. Teva, I think, was the only one manufacturing
a straight black. How black was it? Like, was it... more like charcoal or like gunmetal gray or something?
Yeah, like a dark blue black in that realm, but dark.
Pretty close dark. To black.
Yeah. That great project turned out great, but I always worry, like, those, you know, like plastic and mineral-based products, they take a lot of heat and beating, and thermal expansion was a big issue for us moving into composite products was, how can we stand by our work on something that if we don't come back in 5 years, we don't like how it looks? Like, I don't want to sell a product that costs three times the price as wood. If I know in wood, maybe there's a couple like rotten boards you got to change in 5-10 years or a little bit of maintenance, but composite isn't maintenance free. It's low maintenance. If you're not going to sweep or blow off your deck with Trex Rainscape under it, like, your Rainscape is going to take a beating. That's an investment on its own. So there's a lot of learning curves, I think, that come with the higher end products like that. I mean, as with any trade, you know, the higher end the product, the more of the instruction manual you should be reading before you do it. And being stubborn guys on site, there was a lot of growing up of, we'll figure it out. We've never said no. You throw the book away. Now we're reading the book.
it's funny how I've always been invited to a lot of brands manufacturing process.
Yeah.
Like I was even fortunate enough to go to Estonia and get invited to see the thermary and how it's actually okay, made nice. And should. They wouldn't let me go into the specific patented, you know, like you can't look at this menu, right? We'll tell you all about it, shit like that. But not once have I been approached to go see a composite manufacturing plant.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to. Yeah. I'm concerned of exactly, like, I know we talk about recyclable material and all kinds of shit like that, but I don't really know what's in the cake before I eat it. I know with wood what's in the wood.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Yeah, I honestly don't know how the
every manufacturer is different and they keep it secretive. They're like, they don't want to let anybody know. And it's just like it's sad. Like recently, I'm sure you guys probably noticed that not all recyclable garbage is being recycled. It's just being thrown into the landfill. So like, why are
80% or something just gets tossed in the garbage.
So now I'm just pushing my envelope and I'm like, I'm throwing fucking garbage in the recycle. I don't care. I just want to see if it's going to get called out on me or something.
I just
want to see it. I'm curious, right?
Oh, yeah.
But if you guys aren't doing what you're telling us to do and I'm looking at a product, I'm going, okay, so what exactly is in this thing? Like, tell me what's inside this. So that's why I'm not a huge fan of it. But I've had clients push and push, and we want it. I've had clients like 8-inch wide boards and, you know, stainless steel screws and torque, you know, and all that shit. And I'm like, it's a pain in the ass. Looks beautiful. Works done. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah, it's quite the process. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's challenging, right? But yeah, you're right. Like, you can't dictate what that material is going to do in so like such extreme temperatures.
Oh yeah.
We just don't know, right?
That's it. There's just so much with our climate, I think, that makes it difficult. And Canada, I think we definitely noticed that we're definitely slower to the market with outdoor products than the States. And going to events like Deck Expo, the NADRA events and stuff, you really see how far ahead they are in the States 100%. Than they are here. And I get it. It's a way bigger market, bigger to invest in. We're kind of the lower dogs, you know. We take the top 20 contractors in the States to this event. We take the two from Canada. And, you know, that's a hard, like, competition.
10 to 1 ratio population-wise, right?
So it's like it all kind of makes sense at the end. But we tried to focus on what's the best for them right now. Because if we can figure out how to get that here, that's what will set us ahead. Competitive advantage is like we're offering the best and we know why. But I think there's kind of a dark shadow that looms with the composite PVC products. It's tough to say this. I hope this doesn't affect us negatively in the future, but it's kind of a dark shadow to it with quality of consistency of product.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
It's hard. Like, you're spending a lot of money on a product. Like, you know, deck boards, you get variance in width. The EPE boards, we get width and height on the board variance, which is difficult to build with. But when you expect the product to be consistent because it's a manufactured product.
Man-made product.
And they taper
a cake. That's what I'm saying. It's like there's something that might be off, right?
Exactly. So it's
I think tough. With America, sure, they're a huge deck fence. The problem I have is that when I start seeing a lot of their projects that they're building, the colors are... There's no natural details to them. You know what I'm saying by that?
Yeah, it's almost it's very like flat.
I'm driving into the, you know, Scissorhands community suburban area.
Yeah.
Like everybody has a specific color of a fence, a specific color of a deck, and none of it feels natural. It just feels manufactured.
Exactly.
And that's what I start to get worried about. It's like, great, great, install it. It's wonderful. It's a beautiful color. But what's it going to be like 10 years down the line, age when it wears and tears and whatever, and you get I don't know, a pressure washer accidentally hits it or something, and the color starts fading. I don't know. Like, I really don't know, right?
A little salt on the deck or something. And there you go.
What's going to happen when all this stuff's got to get demolished to get replaced?
Oh, very true.
Where do you put it? What bin do you throw that shit in there?
Yeah.
I don't know what bin that goes into. I'm just assuming the garbage bin. I don't know what you
do. It'll end up there anyways, so just dumpster it.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting, like...
But clients are clients, and they do their own homework, and those companies, they have great marketing machines where they're like, you know, they keep pushing that zero maintenance bullshit, which I don't agree with it. It's like, it's a lie. You guys are basically saying a lie, right?
Oh, yeah.
But if clients want it, and it's the smart clients that do their homework, and they just... I think the fair assessment is you guys probably do it as well, is like you give them a few samples of whatever, let it sit outside for a day, come out here in the morning, have a coffee, step on it barefoot, come out here with the kids, dogs, or whatever, experience each floor.
Like, exactly.
No different than you go into a deck supplier or whatever, and they've got the whole showroom set up with a bunch of different samples so you can look at what it looks like in a 4-foot square or something like that. That's what should be done for clients so they can get a better experience of it. But with the showrooms of the deck suppliers, there's no natural element on top of it.
Oh, no.
Mother Nature's not on this, and so you're inside of, like,
lights over it.
Oh yeah, and it, I mean those are expensive setups too. Like yeah, we've always talked about we'd love to have a showroom to showcase what we think we could do is the best, but you know those that's like thousands of square feet.
Get the HHR and slap all the different options of decking on the roof and on the sides, and then just park it at your client's house and go here, touch it, and experience it.
It's literally, yeah. A Dumb and Dumber shagging wagon or something, all deck.
The anchor guys are here again. Yeah. Look, they're going to be building this week because the HHR is here, man. Oh, yeah.
Definitely. They're funny moments to look back on for us. We're like, wow, we've come so far. We've got four trucks now. We got multiple crews running. We're like, we literally came out of a clown car on job sites, borrowing vehicles to get material, to now being like, oh, I don't want to put the material in my truck. Take it in your truck.
But I love it that there was never a no. It was always a solution.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We just had to keep going. We were really good about investing in ourselves too with tools. Because when we were working for our other guy, it'd be like, we'd work like a 9-hour day of digging holes, make $200. It was all right. But then we start our own thing, we'd work like a 4-hour day and make like $250. We'd be like, this is the best thing in the world. We're doing what we want. We're playing a lot more Call of Duty. We're hanging out. And then we'd leave some money aside. And like every week or two, we'd be buying a new tool. So we'd be now, okay, next week, we're not borrowing a chop saw from Trevor's dad. We're buying a chop saw and we got table saws and just kept adding on to it. Anytime that we had a big job that we knew a tool could make it more efficient, we'd bite the bullet right away. We wouldn't wait till we had like 4 or 5 of those jobs or like we're using it every day. It's like the first time you use it, if it's going to save you like half the cost of the tool, have it. And then next time you have that job, it'll be paid off by then. It was like a lot of long-term thinking when we were doing our purchasing.
I like that there's good builders, you know, up by you guys or down here all over the Canada area, whatever. It's just, they like sharing, but do they also like sharing money? Tips, money ideas, because it's always great that we all get started in the industry and we gauge how much we want to be making, not necessarily by our worth, but what we need to survive right now at the moment. But then as you grow, your survivability starts to increase, so you need to be making more money because you want to start planning more stuff. So it's easier to go to the trades and go, listen, how the hell are you getting material, ordering material, organizing crews, finding employment? But how often do you guys have a conversation with other trades going, how much money are you making, like profit wise? Like, are you surviving, or what's it, like? Do they give that up?
That's a rare conversation.
It's a rare conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody likes to talk about that too much.
What is it? Because they're afraid of you guys are being taken for a ride. You guys are charging too much. You guys are like, there's going to be a stigma attached to it.
I think some of it comes to competition too. But I mean, that being said, we've had one of our biggest, I'd say, motivators in the decking industry. He's very, very open with us on Instagram with pricing and stuff. He's actually messaged us before to say, hey, you're taking too long on that, because I know what that goes for and I know how long you've taken to do it and what you should be paying your employees based off what I pay mine. Wow. And I know you're not in the profit, so you need to revisit what you're doing or do it a different way, because that's not efficient. And on the same scale, we've had other contractors in the fencing industry reach out to us saying, hey, your prices are way too low. Like, you're affecting my business because I cost more to be profitable. I don't understand how you guys are being profitable at that price. And that was kind of like, I mean, call it a monopoly if you want, having collusion between the businesses of it. But at the end of the day, it was
banks and telecommunications and government. They all do it to us. Why can't we do it to
everybody? There's a lot less of them. There's hundreds of guys building fences out here. So
I mean, we learned, right? That extra money helped us grow as a business to provide a better service at the end of the day. We were just cheating ourselves and our clients.
But you're also experienced and you didn't know. Like, you really didn't know. You were just showing up on the job site. First of all, you're happy that you got a client to agree to hire you.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big hurdle in the beginning, right? Like, holy shit, someone wants to pay me for my skill set.
Yeah. They're putting the trust in us.
Yeah. So, and now you got to start figuring out, well, wait a minute, I want to operate a business now. So there's now more than just me paying the 3 guys.
We got
a shop.
We got nice trucks. We got employees. We have to keep busy.
Yeah.
It's a lot more responsibility. Mm-hmm. So all your costs are just constantly going up the bigger you get.
So how's the growth conversations now? Now that you guys are established, you have a brand, people recognize you, you have a team. You're growing now, and now you have to try to figure out, where are we going to grow to? I'm sure you guys have had conversations and whiteboards that don't involve any rub and tugs, that you guys are like figuring out, where are we going to take Anchor? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're kind of rolling with it right now. Like, Trevor only moved up north last spring.
Yeah, last April, full
he's
time.
He's doing really well up there, and he's got a good crew established. He's added a couple guys, and he's getting kind of the vibe set up for it and building relationships. And down here, we're kind of trying to stick to what we know. We find there's a problem. Like, it's hard to find guys right now.
Everybody.
And when you have a big variety of work that you're doing, it's very hard to teach guys. So I can hire a kid who doesn't have much experience, and I can teach him to board a fence in like half an hour. By the end of like 2 days, he'll probably be pretty good at it. And I can frame 200, 250 feet of fence a day, and he can just follow behind me and board, and I know that we're going to be making great money. But if I have guys that we're bringing in and I'm trying to teach them how to do flooring, how to do trim, how to mud a house, how to tape, all these different skills, they don't have enough repetition to actually learn those skills. So I'm trying to dial it back so they're just like book more large commercial fencing jobs so that they can just beat
feed
the dead horse of building fences for like 6 months until they're really good at that. And then we'll slowly work them into decks and progress their skills slower, because they're not coming in with a good base set of skills.
Where's the difficulty? Is it the teaching or the learning? Or is it both?
Bit of both.
It's both, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we have a very high expectation of quality and like workmanship. So there's
but you guys are also rare that you guys went through all kinds of hardships to get to where you got to, where you don't really hear about that today.
Yeah.
You tell a kid today, you're going to do this many post holes, you're going to hit this many rocks. Before you finish the statement, they're going to be gone. They're not
going to hang out,
right? They're like, I'm not doing that.
That's it. Our turnover seems to be with employees that we hire, they either last a day or they last years. It's like very rare to have someone only come for a month or two and say, this isn't working. It's like 1 or 2 days of working. You know, they don't fit with it. They don't like it. See you later. And the guys that we have that have kind of stuck around and really helped us succeed as a business, like that's the most important part for us for growth is building a team with like quality and workmanship and pride is like the number one. And we ran into a lot of, well, it's easier for me to do it, so I'll teach you next time because like I can't afford to be showing you how to do this and cut this like pre-stained crown molding wrong 3 times. Well, you'd literally just lost your salary for today on the work that you messed up. Like, I can't afford to teach you that, even though I want to, and I want you to be able to do it. So there's a lot of, you know, I want to put expectations on guys to do the quality work that we want. But at the same time, like Alex saying, we got to dial it back and kind of start from scratch because we don't hire a lot of already skilled employees. We'll take straight green right out of school, young guys, and mold them the way we want so they don't already have bad habits or bad skills that you're trying to kind of beat out of them.
It's a better path for you guys business-wise.
Like the longevity of having guys around.
Yeah, I think you have a lot more misses. You're not going to have the consistency you would with somebody who's already been a framer or something. But even somebody with framing experience would be great to have. They come in and there's a high expectation for wages these days. And
what are they asking for these days?
Like a good framer is easily 35, 40.
Yeah, it's hard. Like everyone, like very green employees with no skills want 20, 25. And I say, hey, I started at $7 an hour with skills and I was lucky to have gotten a job anywhere because the market was the opposite. You couldn't just walk in anywhere and get a job. It was like you were begging to get a job. You're like, let me show you what I can do for you. I'll work for free for 2 days so that you want to hire me on. Now it's like, you got to pay them up front and provide them this and that just to have them show up.
What do you
and
mean
tell you
pay them
like
up front? What are you talking about?
A lot of guys will be like, I want to be paid today at the end of the day, or like, I don't want to go on salary yet because then I have like a delay in payment. Like, can you pay me cash? You're like, no, like we're trying to build a legitimate brand so that we can succeed in the future in our offerings and last. And those are things that kind of undermine our business when we can't, you know, grow the way we want to grow.
Negotiating right out of the gate, huh?
It's tough. Like getting new employees is tough, I find.
When you can make $17 at like Shoppers or McDonald's, like if you're paying them $20, like $3 more to be stabbing the ground with metal bars and mixing concrete,
lumber.
No, I don't need that $3. So
yeah.
high expectations, but they don't have the skills when it comes to actually building things.
So. Do they get a discount at McDonald's, don't they?
Most likely.
They probably do. Shoppers, would they get a discount there too?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah. I worked at Shoppers, yeah.
You got a discount there?
I did, yeah. And then I ended up having a falling out. I went right across the street to Rexall, right to the competition. Like, no allegiances. Like, I'm with you until you're not with me. And then I'm out and I'll do what's best to take care of the ship, you know?
Again, you guys don't do no's. You guys do solutions, right? It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Trying to build the right ways to keep guys around is what we're realizing. Like, sometimes, you know, your business can't afford to pay the top wage of the person in the area, but you know, maybe you're offering benefits or a company truck or, you know, somebody is, yeah, someone's wearing work gear on site, but you got nicer work gear or something. Like, try to make things about your work environment better so that people want to be part of your team, like build some allure to your brand. So it's like, I feel good working for that company, not like, great, another 8, 10, 12 hour day with a max amount of travel and I hate my life doing it. It's like, you want to wake up excited for work. And that's what we try to bring to our crews, is like, we will always be the loudest laughing, like telling jokes, having a good time crew on site. We always joke about it being like, we have the most fun at work. Like, yeah, we'll always have the best time.
You gotta love it.
Because like, do you want to be miserable at work? I don't. I want to look forward to what I'm doing.
And you're there for 8 to 10 or whatever. That's a big chunk of time, right?
Oh, yeah. You spend more time with these people than your family a lot of the time. So it's like, I want them to feel like family and not like just the guys I work with. I want it to be like the same type of people I would have at my wedding or at my funeral. Same type of people. Like, I want the people close to me, and to have that environment at work too, I think is something that's helped us get to where we're at. It's people wanting to stick around even when things get tough or the money's better somewhere else or something. It's like, we're the guys you want to work with, hopefully. So,
have you guys come across any things that you pitched and you wanted to build, but you hadn't, I guess the clients backed out last minute. They thought it was too expensive, too risky. We don't want to try to pull it off just yet. Because you guys have tackled all kinds of stuff, right? Like even pergolas and all kinds of projects, outdoor, indoor.
Yeah, but nothing comes to mind. Think of one that didn't go.
Yeah, like we dream pretty big sometimes.
That's what I figured. I'm assuming that there's probably something that's coming up. Then you're like, let's pitch this. I need to pitch this. We got to get a client who's going to do this, right? Let's do this.
We've talked about like built-ins, a lot more built-ins with our decks, like water features, fire features and stuff. Things that we're seeing on Instagram from people we look up to, like, we gotta be doing that. Like, there are techniques even that like guys in Ontario, shout out Dustin at Aztec Decks. He like pioneered a technique with slipping fascia behind a vertical deck board. First guy that we saw do it. So that's why I'll say it was Dustin, but first one to see him rabbit a deck board, slip the fascia behind, because fascia's thermal expansion is insane for being so thin. And that was a technique, like everybody's doing that now, like stair risers, tucking it behind, done. Like, it's a great technique picked up through Instagram. So it's kind of like, stay on that track of learning from the people around you of what's the best thing you can offer to stay the best or up with the top dogs, let's say. But yeah, we've definitely had a couple projects where we're like, you should do this, that, this is what we would do. And then they seem excited till they see the price. Yeah. And then it's sticker shock for a lot of things. Like, it's hard to sell a deck that cost $100,000 when maybe they bought their first house for $100,000. And you're trying to sell them that's what it costs these days.
The mental well-being of being on that deck in those days that you don't want to be dealing with stress and all kinds of crap, you'll be appreciating this $100,000 that you spent there. It's going to be far less than the therapy that you'll be dealing with don't build this deck.
Yeah, it's just tough to find those clients. They're a needle in a haystack.
Since I got you guys here, I'm just curious, because I know that you guys are probably tackling a lot more outdoor kitchen areas, right? Like, people just want to expand and expand and expand, right?
Yeah.
And who's got a good barbecue, man, these days? Like,
you know, Crown Verity. They're based out of Brantford. You'll see them at a lot of the golf courses and
like, they're custom like made.
They're very industrial. They're like handmade in Brantford. They get ripping to like 800, 900 degrees. They're an amazing barbecue. I know they're very industrial and commercial targeted, but a lot of nice houses, you'll see a Crown Verity in their backyard.
Is it worth having all this, like, I saw like warming drawers and all this crap on the side? And
I haven't
like,
gotten man, to
I come from a grill. I just need a grill, right?
We did a project. The client actually picked out the kitchen, their outdoor like barbecue setup. said, hey, can you go pick it up for me? I said, yeah, this is a barbecue, whatever. Take my truck over there. It filled the whole bed of my truck, extended bed. Full bed was barbecue components. My whole back seat was barbecue components, front seat. I drove to his house looking like a flatbed truck. Like, I got your barbecue, and I saw the invoice. It was $14,000 for a barbecue. I'm like, from a brand I'd never heard of. I think it was Fisher Paykel.
Oh, yeah.
And
they're doing barbecues, though?
Oh, yeah. And whoa.
It was like, nice.
That was the Rolls Royce. That's a barbecue.
How's the flame? Is it like True Blue?
Oh, True Blue. That's what
they're known for, right?
It was something else. It was...
I didn't realize that they got into the game. It's just, it's funny how Weber never got into that custom barbecue game.
Yeah.
They just want to stay in their own little lane with their own units. And I'm like, nobody wants the whole trolley kit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They want just to cook, and then they want surfaces to,
yeah.
You know, to cook things. All their prep space and stuff. Yeah. It's wild. That was an eye opener for me. I thought the most expensive barbecue was like your $2,000 Napoleon or Weber or something you see at Home Depot. It was like, oh, there's a realm outside of what I think. And we joke about it on sites on the dock saying, stop thinking poor. Because we don't understand. Why would they do something like that? That doesn't even make sense to me. And we go, stop thinking poor. you don't understand that realm because they're about 900 clicks above us right now. You wouldn't get it. So that's kind of the running joke.
It's what they want. So they want to experience it out there, right?
Exactly.
But I find that the middle class, and I guess the lower class, is also interested in doing versions of that.
Oh,
in their own backyards, right?
Yeah, there's so much exposure with social media. They see all this stuff, and everyone's like, oh, I want that. And they see the price tag, and they're like, they got some hard decisions to make. But some of them will do it. They'll be like, this is really important to me, and I'm going to spend the money and put that in my backyard.
What are you guys doing for counter?
I was going to say, like, golf simulators and stuff. Like, it's just wild.
On the exterior?
Yeah, and they'll just invest in, like, something that you're like, that's a lot of money. I can't believe someone would spend it. I maybe wouldn't, but it's a project you like to build
if
or something.
If you love
good.
Golf and you like want to do it and you don't necessarily want to go or whatever, it's raining or some shit, it's got a canopy on it.
Oh, yeah.
You can practice so when you do go and you can be better than you whoever you're playing against, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Countertop wise, like what are you guys cladding everything with or whatever? Like, what are the clients asking for these days? Are they going natural stone? Are they going man made stones? Or are they going. It's just
whatever. A lot of natural, I think.
Yeah.
And natural stone seems to be the trend on like cladding as well. Like we do a lot of like the kitchen enclosure, like framing. And then it's kind of like, you know, do you want your Versetta stone or fusion or something like pre-made? Or do you want like a grouted on natural stone? It seems to be
grouted on natural stone.
Yeah. It's like, it looks the best. It's so timeless. Then, you know, I'm seeing it a lot up in the Muskoka regions, like people's chimneys and stuff, like a 50-foot tall natural stone, like hand-selected boulders. And I'm like, that's the stuff that's going to last forever. That's what I look at it as a builder. Like,
nobody's going to, not in this generation, is going to demolish this one day.
Exactly.
It's going to stay put there, right?
Yeah, it's not like the McDonald's of building, where it's just like fast production homes, which in my opinion, it was build them fast, quick, and efficient because you're building them for the people. That kind of turned into like now even those homes are $1.5 million like for your quick build ones where
but they're gonna all be
but they're all being gutted
years,
or knocked down or gutted or whatever it is and then they're being all turned into certain things, right?
That's where I'm like I like to think that I'd want to focus on like, you know, building things that stand the test of time, like building something for 50 to 100 years versus the thought of like a 25 year life expectancy on products. And that's why like moving forward and decking, going from like pressure treated materials to composite and thermary and stuff. It's like products that are being created to push the limits on what we're doing. And I feel like there's a real big divide in construction between companies that want to push the limit to do the best as they can or the cheapest, most efficient way that you can. And it's kind of like one or the other. It's hard middle ground
to be
like. It's
hard for a corporation to not build off a profit.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like that's what it's going to dictate, right? So, but it's just, it's funny how, I don't know, you could be a North American, Canadian, US, you want all this composite stuff, you want all this man-made material, but then when you do vacation and you travel somewhere, you go to places in Europe that is all natural stone that's been around for centuries. Mm-hmm. And you love the way it feels, you love the way it looks, and the way it's integrated and everything, and you're like going, why does home look weird compared to here? And I'm like,
this looks like so cookie cutter and like, you know, it's like the show Weeds where it's just like the little boxes on the hilltops. That's all they are. They're just cut, paste, and repeat over and over. Where I'm like, let's go back to the roots. Like, let's build things that last a long time. So, like, a great, 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 like, grandchildren's generation can walk through it being like, holy cow, how did they build this? This is immaculate. You know, like, I joke around with my fiance a lot about the pyramids and stuff like that. How could they build these? The old ancient aliens arguments and all that crap. And I'm like, people can do it. I see the skills of the people on site every day.
People were different back then.
Yeah. I'm like, you can do a lot when you don't have to pay people to do things. You force them to do it. But yeah, it's like people are capable of doing those things. It's just over time we've become profit driven and like that consumerist society of just build, consume, knock down, do it again, instead of you're appreciating the craftsmanship that went into something that took thousands of hours, instead of like, yeah, I whipped this house up in 3 days. Like, oh, that's great. Good for you.
It's not appreciated anymore.
Yeah.
What is the lifespan of a product? Like, if you really think about it, in today's construction, lifespan of a product is probably 2 decades.
Yeah.
That's like elderly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's that, like, at 2 decades, you probably get a lot of people saying, we're going to demolish this and start all over again.
Yeah, even with like design trends, like it can still be perfectly functional, but now it's out of style and we're going to rip it out and redo it.
I don't know. See, if you build it, I'm going with you guys where it's like you build it quality wise and you spend the time and effort and build it really well. I don't think it'll ever go out of style.
Yeah, it's appreciated.
If you go with the trends.
If it's not a trendy style that you go with, well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things that were built in the 80s and 90s that the things that weren't trendy are still hanging around. Like, mm-hmm. go right to Frank Lloyd Wright and Falling Water.
Yeah.
Like, how old is that? And it hasn't been changed. And if you walk in there today at 2024, it still is quality and it's still holding up time.
Yeah.
It's and what is that? He was just using basic natural materials. Mm-hmm. You imagine building Falling Water today with composite and all kinds of other.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Like nobody, that's what I'm saying. It's pyramids, anything else. Like yeah. we appreciate the workmanship that was done and the quality of the material that was used at the time. Mm-hmm. I think corporations now, for profit reasons, they try to mimic it.
Yeah.
And it's like mimicking is like plastic surgery. It's just like, fine, at a distance, it may look great. But once you get a better look at it, it doesn't look all that hot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And give it 10, 15 years and it's not going to age the same.
So that's I don't know. I don't know. Brought it back to med school there, man.
Yeah.
You guys ever leave signatures? You guys ever, like, I don't know, write anchor or do the actual anchor sign or and in the behind not something? Really.
We talked about it for a while. We're going to get a brand.
A brand,
the
fences, yeah.
Just heat it up with a torch and, like, stamp it on the corner posts of every fence.
You're afraid that it might turn into Yellowstone or something like that?
Yeah, we're not sure.
A couple people on site, I think, might end up with some anchor tattoos at the end of that.
Hideaway Screens, a privacy screen company out of Edmonton, they actually sent us some custom-made kind of 4x4 laser cut, powder coated Overdose our logo.
Nice.
So they send them out to a lot of deck guys or people that they work with a lot, so that you can actually just screw those onto like a corner of a deck project. But it feels, I don't know, it feels like you're slapping marketing on someone's backyard.
Slap it on the backside. I would put it underneath before the fascia board or whatever.
Yeah, where someone like services.
So you know that you built it and it's done, and then 50 years down the line, if someone's demolishing it, they're like, hey, Anchor built this.
Yeah.
You probably engraved like the date that it was completed or some shit like that.
Yeah, I like that idea.
The client wouldn't have a problem with that. I mean, like, that's how we discover older homes when you're demolishing certain things. You saw the carpenter at the time, carpenter pencil wrote their name and date. And
back
whatever.
Of the drywall, renovated in 88 by Joe and Sam.
Exactly, right?
Actually, we did a project last year, one of our largest like projects to date as a company. 4 months. Only half of the house's worth of siding and like softening fascia. It was an insane amount of exterior millwork, like that would rival an interior of a house.
Yeah.
And like we knew the company that framed it and they did an excellent job. And the gentleman that was leading that crew liked to sign his name on his work. And we felt the pride that we were going to do that too. So we were signing our name on it in places that actually turned around and blew up in our face because the owner of the building company came and did a walkthrough. And when he saw the thing signed with people's names, he said, that just tells me you had too much time on your hands that you guys were able to do that. So it was like the give and take. Like, I understand that position of like, you come here, you see that, that looks like work done that when work wasn't getting done, when in reality it was like the guy three layers up on scaffold may have been waiting for a piece from the saw down on the ground getting cut, painted, passed up.
What are you talking about here? Seconds, man. It's right? Just a
that,
sign.
Yeah. That's it. So it's like little things that added up on there. So I found that one funny.
He was just jealous that his name wasn't up there.
That's it, right? Throw her on. Like it takes, it's one of those that falls on taking pride in your work and being proud of what you do. Like,
I think trades should do this. I think they should find unique ways of trying to leave their signature somewhere on that job.
That's it. I feel like if you're required, you'd probably take a little more pride in your work if someone knew who, like, I'm sure everyone can say there was a job they weren't proud of or did something that they would do differently the next time. Well, if your name was on it, you maybe think twice about that corner you cut.
Well, what about cornerstones? I mean, this is all coming back to the architects and engineers and whoever owned the building and the wealthy individuals. They slapped their friggin' surname and the year. Yeah. It was carved into some guy was carving it at that time and putting it. Like, you're making it blatantly obvious right at the front door of the entry. We're just trying to hide it behind the skirt board. That's all we're trying to do. Like, we want to just say, listen, I built that, right? That's all it is, right?
That's exactly it.
I'd be arguing that point, challenging them, man. Guys, this has been good. I got to do the 12 questions. Is there anything else you guys want to share? No shout out to Nick? No, nothing at all?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Nick and his wonderful wife, Taylor. Couldn't have done this business without them and their wonderful child that they have at home now. He was born in November last year.
Nice.
They're doing a great job raising that baby. I don't know how they do it and manage multiple businesses as well. So shout out to Nick.
Good, good. Anchor Construction at Anchor Construction on IG. 289-828-3044. Info at anchorconstruction.ca and www.anchorconstruction.ca. I think I've covered... yeah, I did. Well, you guys also do some epoxy work too, don't you? I've seen some epoxy projects.
You're dabbling in it, hobby right? stuff.
Oh, and the other thing I was going to bring up, I bring this up because of fences. I have a neighbor who's got like that 30-year-old fence that's already fallen over. Right? You know how they just let time go and it starts to do this. And
yeah,
I drove by it 2 days ago and it's like 2/3 of the section is completely down. So obviously the point of the post where it's met ground is rotted out and it's completely fallen over, right? Mm-hmm. And I've always said that the 8-foot span of fences makes no sense in my opinion. It should be 4-foot span.
Oh, yeah.
I understand the theory behind the math on why it's an 8-foot and how everything's designed for 8-foot, the lattice and all this other stuff, traditional stuff, but I think they should be 4-foots. But everyone always kind of picks a fight with me about, like, it's an extra post every time. I get it. But the thing is, longer.
You have to remember, like, sometimes we go in and do a fence, and it's the third fence on that property. So when you demo a fence, you're not pulling out every plug with a bobcat.
No, no.
You're cutting it below the grade, burying the old post, and then offsetting for your new post.
Yeah.
So we'll go into a job if we're the third generation fence. You pull your 8 feet off your first corner post, and, of course, the fence you just took down has a post there. So you can... either do a 9-foot panel and go slightly past it, or start with a 7, and then you're 1 foot behind every post.
Every post, yeah.
But if you're the third post, third guy in there, and there's a 12-inch footing in the ground every 16, 18 inches, you're really playing with fire. At some point, like 2050, when we start getting to fourth generation fences, they're going to become expensive because you're going to have to start.
Someone's going to have to excavate everything.
You have to pull a whole line of plugs out.
All kinds of
stuff. So if you were doing 4-foot centers, maybe you'd get 2 fences on a property before you had to do that.
Well, my thought process is the 4-foot centers, that fence would last twice as long if you maintain it.
Yeah, for sure.
Like the big jump was 4x4 to 6x6 for us. We started selling 6x6 almost at the start, and everyone was like, you guys are crazy. That's so oversized.
No,
we would never even build a 4x4 fence. We haven't done it for years. We turned them away.
6x6 makes sense.
That's it. And that's kind of like the quality of the materials, you know, like they're not building them with the same materials they were, like with the arsenic and like copper treatments in the green PT. Now it's more environmentally safe. Yeah. So it's not going to last as long.
And they're steroid trees.
Yeah.
They're all like 7-8 years old.
The materials are
not ridiculous. They're not the old growth trees that they used to be. We've done repairs where a 4x4 set in the ground, not getting soaked, just gets snapped by the wind 2 years later. So it just, it doesn't make sense.
A brand new piece of timber?
Really? Oh, yeah. Yeah, brand new 4x4s. They just don't last. So yeah. That's kind of like, you know, avoid that. Don't spend the money on the 6x6 because 5 years ago, well, you were crazy to do 6x6. Now it's, you're crazy to think about 4x4. And eventually it'll be an 8x8 maybe, or metal posting and whatever. Like, there's always going to be that innovation to it. But with horizontal fencing, we go 6 foot. We're just like, yeah, I mean, lumber's 8 foot. It's convenient. Fits in your truck, whatever. But, you know, either buy 12 footers and cut them in half. Very efficient.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you just, you have a little bit more waste.
Construction. But, they make material that you can cut in half in different lengths other than 8.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very like rudimentary part of the carpentry trade, us fence builders. We're like very simple folk.
We don't complicate things, yeah, man.
A couple pieces of it. That's it.
What's your favorite construction word?
Scribe.
Dialed.
Least favorite tool. What's the one Milwaukee tool that you guys don't like?
It's not a Milwaukee tool, but I hate the quick cut. I guess Milwaukee tool, the anytime I got a grind or sometimes multi-tooling drives me a little nuts. Cut? It's just so loud and dusty, like for masonry.
Mm. Yeah, that's a I say multi-tool. It's just so oscillator, just me. Yeah,
what construction sound do you guys love?
I love just hearing nails getting banged at a high speed in the backyard. It's the sound of money.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. The sound of just nails popping off. It's just, you mean, it always means work's getting done. It's great.
Favorite beverage?
Rum and Coke. Beer.
Appleton?
Diet Coke.
Actually, quick shout out. My dad has a distillery in Brantford called Man's Distillery. So he makes his own rum now and...
It's called Man's?
Man's, yeah. That's our last name. So it's Man's Distillery. He does a lot of gins, and then he does rum, whiskey, vodka. I actually really like his rum, so I've been drinking that for the last couple of years.
Out of Canada, eh? Like, I know everyone's getting on the train about, you know, microbreweries and shit like that.
Yeah, the breweries were like 10 years ago. The breweries just popped up like flowers.
The spirits in Canada are like good now, man.
Oh, yeah. Now it's all about the distilleries.
Yeah.
Yeah, their stuff's awesome. I buy bottles every time I get down to Brantford. I'm like, stock up and bring them back up and, you know, support local, right? So,
what's yours?
I'd say Diet Coke. Yeah, Diet I'm not Coke. Much of an alcohol drinker these days. I had my days, and I lived them quick and fast. So, yeah.
What turns you on and off, guys, in construction?
Oh, I'd say quality teamwork is the biggest turn on, and just terrible leadership would be the biggest turn off.
Yeah.
Just working on sites with people that yell and are aggressive, I think, is the biggest one for me.
Yeah, I like working with people who are really well organized and they understand the details of every trade so that things can flow well. And I just don't like people cutting corners, trying to get the cheapest work done and
of course
maximize money. Cause especially with multiple trades, it's just one thing leads to another. The framer screws the drywaller, the drywaller screws these guys. And it just gets passed along until you've built something you're not really proud of.
It's true. Favorite curse word.
One of our employees, Steve, who works with Trevor, was in Australia for a couple of years. So he's really got us on the cunt train.
Yeah, that pretty much would be it.
That's pretty much it. F-bombs are cunt.
Man, they use that word like it's nothing, man.
I know. I said that in front of my negative sometimes.
Nope.
Oh, yeah, I said in front of my mom like 2 weeks ago, not even thinking about it. And just the stares back, like, are you kidding me? I'm like, I've been in a different place for the last while.
Favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Oh, the Brabus G-Wagon.
A boat.
Well, you're going right up there, like 5 figures, huh?
Yeah. I'm not going to have one. I just think it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think like a Stanley Islander, nice big boat to get to work. That's what would do it for me.
What do you guys miss from your childhood?
Just biking around with the friends and having no responsibilities. Just being active all day.
Did you have the foam on the front of the BMX or no?
No, just mountain bikes and just ripping around Brantford with the boys.
Yeah, I'd say a general innocence to the world, really. Just the lack of understanding that as you get older,
what you're about to enter.
Yeah, it's like, oh man, I would go back to being ignorant and unaware and thinking I knew how the world works.
Oh, there's a lot of trades people like that.
Yeah, so I'm like, I'd go back and be that idiot well over again.
What profession other than your own would you guys like to attempt one day?
not super different from what we do, but I love the all the stereotomy stuff.
Oh, the stereotomy stuff, more, yeah.
Like timber framing.
I can't wrap my head around it, man. I'll listen to them. And I'll nod like I agree, yeah. But I can't wrap my head
I don't
head
know if around. I have the patience to do it because I like to get things done. Yeah. Those guys are just meticulous.
Yeah. Stereotomy is definitely a huge interest in my life. There was a point where I really wanted to do Patrick Moore's classes, but the timing just wasn't going to work out. But I'd say tattoo artists would be the secondary. You know, it's what my fiance does, and it's been a realm I've always been interested in as long as carpentry. And yeah, it's lucrative, and it's a great environment, great company to be around. So yeah, I think that's what I would do.
Awesome. What do you guys never want to do?
I don't understand roofers, how they do it.
They look down at you guys. I don't understand how you guys can do all those post holes, man.
But yeah, the sun doesn't agree with me too well.
That's harsh.
And I don't get how they're on the roof all day with the heat coming off the shingles. I could never do it. I can do a garage or a shed, but not
a full house.
Yeah, count me out.
I'd say a sales job and something that I don't care for whatsoever. If I had to sell a product I don't believe in behind a desk,
people will know.
Yeah,
they will know. Last question. If heaven exists, what would you guys like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
You did good, kid.
Yeah. We got some beers up here, and you don't have to work anymore.
Nice, man.
We're going to golf.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it. Taking the time and coming in. Thank you very much. Great chat, man. You guys are doing really well, so keep up.
Appreciate it.
Say hi to the third.
We definitely will. Yeah, likewise, thank you so much for having us. It's an absolute pleasure to be part of this.
Thanks, man. All right, that's it. We're done.
Awesome.
Thanks, Angelina.